You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sider, joined by my co-host, Brennan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at EastSider, and you can follow Brennan on Twitter at BrennanClean14. We're joining you the day after the Suns lost once again. I believe it's their 22nd or the last 24th game that they've lost, 115-88. It honestly wasn't even that close. Could have been a 40-50 point lead if the Pistons tried last night. They didn't, even though Blake Griffin almost put up a triple-double in that amount of time. 26 points, 9 rebounds, 10 assists on 9 of 15 field goals. From a Suns perspective, though, Josh Jackson, 15 points, 11 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal. But he's only 6 of 19 field goal attempts with Devin Booker and TJ Warren out. And then Alex Len had a really solid night, 19 points, 12 rebounds, 3 blocks. And Troy Daniels had 18 points as well, filling for Devin Booker. So, Brandon, what was your main takeaway from last night's game, even though, as we've said a lot on this podcast, and it continues to reign true, and I probably will a lot over the next few weeks, because I imagine there are going to be talks about Devin Booker and TJ Warren possibly sitting out the rest of the season. So just these losses keep piling up, and especially the ones that are not even close.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great basketball to watch. I think we all kind of know what we're getting into at this point, especially with Booker not playing. But I don't know, to me, the big thing, the good thing, I guess, if there is one about this loss, was the minute distribution was a little bit more even, which has sort of been what we've been asking for the past few weeks. Obviously, Josh Jackson led the way with 37 points, finally got that start with Warren out. But besides him, Shaq Harrison got his typical 16, 15 to 20 minutes he's been getting. But Alec Peters got 12, Tyler Ulis got 15, Davon Reed finally got 17 minutes. Bender got his usual 30. But I think that if it could start to look a little more like this, and obviously Warren and Booker won't be out every night, but with only, 10 games now left in the season, it should look a lot more like this every night. And 38% from the field is probably the other big standout to me from a statistical perspective, but it's probably going to be what happens when you play all these guys this many minutes, and to me that's fine. I think this was a good, even, balanced rotation, and it was a step toward what we've been asking for from Triano and the coaching staff.
For sure. I feel like, honestly, me and you and maybe Kellen Olson from Arizona Sports have been the only guys in the entire market that have been saying play Davon Reed more often over Troy Daniels, and people are like, he's a second-round pick, who cares? But Davon Reed, it really has the prototypical profile of what McDonough looks for, and he didn't have a good game last night, 0-4 from 3, and I was talking to Dave King last night as well about this. Do you think it's sort of weird how he's just now starting to see time, even though it's been about 8 months since his knee injury? And I looked up his knee injury history. He's already had 3 injuries with his knee in the past 4 years.
Yeah, I think it's concerning. I think that would probably explain to me why they were so cautious. And it makes sense. I mean, in the same way we talk about, well, what does it hurt for them to give him the time and put the ball in his hands, even just allow him to see legitimate time and kind of develop his role? The same argument could be made that there's no use in pushing him injury-wise in a season that is lost as well. So, you know, it goes both ways, I think, but you're right in that Reed is pretty perfect. The more we hear what McDonough and James Jones and the rest of that front office are looking for, not only does he just fit that idealistically, like he seems like the kind of basketball player that this team is going to target going forward, but to me it was really a matter of, you know, allocation of resources where, you know, not only was he a higher second-round pick, but he's somebody that the team latched onto right away. I mean, I remember people thought he looked pretty good, but then John Gambadoro was on it from pretty much the beginning of the draft process saying, that's their guy. That's who they're picking at 35. It doesn't matter whoever else they bring in. It might just be for scouting purposes, but Davon Reed's the guy that they'll pick, and he obviously was. So to me, it was just like, put him in the game because you wanted him so badly, and he's shown enough to earn that. And so 17 minutes are good.
Yeah, for sure. And I hopefully that goes over 20 minutes or so once, I imagine, Troy Daniels' minutes start to dwindle. And we've now seen the point where they've started to sneakily just forget about Tyson Chandler. Now that neck injury, it seems like he's going to be staying out the rest of the season. And I wanted to ask you as well about Devin Booker and TJ Warren, because it's, I know a lot of people have been asking today, and Jay Triano's comments today made it seem like it was out of his control, so it seems like it's up to Ryan McDonough in the front office here. So if they hold out Devin Booker, and he didn't warm up at all last night, by the way. He was in the practice court doing that, so the media wasn't able to film any of that. But what's your thoughts on this whole situation with Devin Booker? Because he had a bad game against Utah, but all of a sudden this could be an injury where I didn't think it was that severe, but he could miss multiple weeks, even the rest of the season with this.
Well, it's not surprising that they're going to start putting his game time decision, warm up, workout in the practice court. That's funny. I didn't know that before you just said that, but it makes a ton of sense, because if they're going to use the, you know, we'll decide after that warm up, and then like we saw over the weekend when they played the Warriors, he didn't look great. He was kind of hesitant, not doing his normal routine, but he didn't look like he was in, you know, like I'm thinking of.
Oh, he could have played, for sure.
I'm thinking of like people who watched the tournament, Isaac Haas over the weekend. You watch that guy's workout, he's about to break his arm again, just putting up shots in warm up. So if Booker misses the rest of the season, I think it'll just be for precautionary / tanking reasons. And, you know, that's just kind of the way it is. But you were talking to me about the last game. He's already missed, they've played 72. He's only played 54.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. It just going through the rhythm of the season, it definitely didn't feel that way.
Yeah, that's what I asked Kellen about last night, too. Me, Dave, and Kellen were having a pregame chat on the sidelines, and I was talking about, like, the myriad of injuries that Booker's collected. I forgot that he told me, like, ankle injury, finger injury, wrist injury. They're all starting, like, these little small injuries starting to pile up on Devin Booker. And I sort of asked this because I feel like we saw the same argument Porzingis, but it was quickly shot down. But do you think that Booker, with all these litany of injuries, do you think the usage rate of him is kind of taking a toll?
It could. I mean, definitely this year, I think. You know, whether he hasn't really talked about it as far as like a physical toll that it's taking on him, but you could easily see it. I mean, so 32% usage this year, and he's talked all season about being put in uncomfortable situations as far as like the style of basketball. So, I mean, I don't think it's too far of a leap from there to assume that just kind of the different way he's been asked to play, having the ball in his hands so much. And I mean, there's been lots of games this season where you just watch him, and to get away from the defense the way that they're putting attention on him, he is working incredibly hard just to get open shots and try to get open shots. And that obviously takes a toll, and you know, he only has played 54, but those have probably been 54 of the hardest games he's ever had to work his whole basketball life. So yeah, not surprising to me, really.
Yeah, for sure. And I was looking last night when he left the arena compared to the last time he left with an ice pack on his hand. Last night, he didn't leave with an ice pack on his hand, so I don't know what's up with that. Because I know Treon mentioned at press today that their target is Cleveland, but like he mentioned, it's out of their control, so it's really up to McDonough if he plays the rest of the time or not. But I guess I wanted to get your opinion on that, Brent. Do you think that they're going to keep sitting Booker out? Do you think the competitor in Booker is going to want to play and kind of just resist the front office here?
I sort of feel like he plays again. I don't really know. It is sort of silly because it's like, well, 10 games left. It obviously doesn't matter as far as wins and losses go. They're going to probably continue to lose even if he does play, because we saw how he looked with this injury in Utah. That's the thing to remember, I think, is, you know, playing or not playing, we're not going to get that, you know, 30-10 against Houston version of Booker. We're going to get probably closer to that Jazz game where he was, I think, 3 of 18 or 3 of 17.
Yeah, 3 of 18.
Exactly. Like, that's going to be the guy we get it until he works back into form. So, you know, there is a discussion there of, like, we can't really have it both ways, where we don't want them to tank and sit somebody who's healthy and a big-time competitor like Booker, who we want to continue to see develop as well, but also see all these other young guys. So it's not an easy decision, but I think I feel like he's just not going to go down quietly as far as that battle goes if he chooses to fight it with the front office.
Yeah, and if that's the case, too, I think McDonough, from we've spoken with McDonough a couple of times this season as far as media goes after the Bledsoe trade, et cetera, but it seemed like he'd learned his lesson, supposedly, from sitting Bledsoe and having that all go down. So I imagine he doesn't want to go down that same road with Booker, does he? I imagine you're going to offer him a max contract this summer. If he wants to play, he's going to have to play.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just think it sets a bad precedent. Where, you know, last year it was like, okay, it's the veterans. Yeah, Bledsoe was in the middle or the end of one of his better seasons. But at the same time, like, those were the two oldest parts of the rotation outside of Jared Dudley and Barbosa. So, okay, but you're sitting your franchise cornerstone. That's a big difference. That's somebody who needs to be on the court regardless of anything, you know.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think the competitor Booker is going to want to come out, I imagine. against LeBron, but we'll have to see on that, because he said that Treon mentioned at practice today that when Booker touches the ball, as far as catching it, he's not able to do that, so they have to throw him bounce passes. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. And I wanted to get your quick thoughts on TJ Warren, too. He had a knee sprain. No timetable on that. He said he was doubtful for Cleveland. So Booker, you mentioned, was questionable. So TJ seems like he's going to be a longer out compared to Booker. So do you think this might be a time where they actually sit TJ and just let Josh take the reins for the starting small forward spot for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think that one makes a lot more sense, just because of what you said. Jackson being able to start is pretty important. Even regardless of what they see long-term, I think that's some experience that's beneficial for him, whereas there kind of isn't like a logical guy to step right into Booker's role. So having him on the floor, I think, does kind of help things out a little bit, whereas sitting Warren, you just have Josh slide right into that role and then, you know, give Reed and Peters some of those backup minutes at the three and the four that Jackson had previously. I think that rotation-wise makes a little more sense. Plus, Warren's injury is more severe. I mean, a left knee sprain, that's a lot more worrisome long-term than a wrist, you know, to me at least, and it seems that way just based on kind of the severity of it and whatnot.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like TJ's probably going to be a candidate to set up the rest of the season alongside Tyson Chandler, who's just, at this point, DMP, he's too old, it seems like, because his neck has been a problem for over a month now. But I want to go on real quick. I want to get your thoughts before we jump into our coaching discussion on the tank race real quick, because that Atlanta Hawks win last night over the Utah Jazz in Utah not only shocked me, but it might have just almost sealed the point to where the Grizzlies and the Suns might be just number one, number two picks as far as the best odds before the lottery.
Yeah, I'm glad that you hit on that too, because I was going to bring it up. Pretty big. I mean, the Hawks are just too good to tank is really all it is. They have too good of a coach, too good a system. And honestly, like, a little further along with their young talent than a lot of these other teams are. Like, Dennis Schroeder, I mean, I guess Booker's probably a better player than him, but up and down the roster, they just have too many guys who bring it every night to keep losing these games. So now that they have some healthier guys, like, it wouldn't surprise me if they won one or two more. They're just too good. So the Grizzlies and Suns have fumbled their way to the finish line here in pretty outstanding fashion. So that, yeah, I think that Hawks one might end up being pretty big.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, getting Luka Doncic or DeAndre Ayton out of this season is going to have to be a top priority for McDonough. And I feel like I wanted to ask you, because I have a big board releasing tomorrow, are Ayton and Doncic the two most guaranteed guys for you out of this draft? Because I came away from it after watching more that those two guys are going to be the most transcending guys out of this draft.
Yeah, I've thought that all year. I still think that. Especially, I mean, you kind of looked like maybe if someone has a big March, there's some possibility that they could, you know, work their way into that conversation, and then all the prospects just got bounced in the first two rounds. So to me, there's no way anyone leaps above those two guys. And I'm excited to see what they both can do next year.
For sure. And I'm really, we're going to be diving into a lot of draft coverage here on Locked On Suns. We have the NCAA tournament picking back up for the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. So Mikal Bridges, SGA, all those guys are going to be back in action as possible Suns picks in the next few months. But we're going to jump over to the coaching search real quick, because that's really closing in pretty fast, about 3 weeks away. So the Suns, I imagine, are putting in some calls right about now to see who's going to want some interviews after the season wraps up. And Mark Stein of the New York Times, formerly of ESPN, he had a report today in his newsletter that mentioned two guys I actually really like as far as, really honestly, my top two or top three, and that's Igor Kokoskov of the Utah Jazz, who makes a lot of sense. He's a former Phoenix Suns assistant, actually. He left alongside Dan Majerle. And then also, I believe he mentioned Jay Wright of Villanova, who the Phoenix Suns reportedly did pursue before they hired Earl Watson. So those guys seem like number one, number two on my board already. So if McDonough's targeting those guys, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's perfect. I think, you know, as Stein mentions in this newsletter, the Suns want to explore the college ranks was kind of how he started it out. And if you're going to do that, this tournament, again, has shown us just how far above. I mean, ESPN ran a feature on Villanova building a college dynasty like 2 weeks ago. And now Jay Wright emerges from this horrid basketball played in the first weekend from some of these blue blood teams, and again makes the Sweet 16 pretty much unscathed, has two possible first round prospects coming out of his system, and continues to look like the best coaching prospect to come out of there. And, I mean, Kokoskov, too, the other thing with him is obviously the, well, maybe not obvious, but led Slovenia, coaches their national team. They won Eurobasket with Goran Dragic and then obviously Luka Doncic as well. So if you are able to have that package come into town, that's can't be much better than that as far as a pair of coach and player to bring in and kind of revamp the culture, revamp the style of play, and do it all at once.
I hate to read into that as far as Kokoskov, because that's obviously going to be a connection there with the Slovenia stuff, but if they did hire Kokoskov, is Luka Doncic the guy they're going to take? Because if that's the case, I feel like that's almost a sign sealed deliver at that point.
Well, it would. I mean, all I'll say is it would be very weird for them to hire Kokoskov in May and then draft DeAndre Ayton in June.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, that makes so much sense, because look at how Kokoskov turned Doncic and Goran Dragic, that backcourt. They were unstoppable in that Eurobasket tournament. That was really fun to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Jay Wright, the great thing about him, too, if you are going that way is, I mean, he. So the thing is, too, he will be probably not just for the Suns. He's the most desirable guy, I mean, of anybody in the whole country, coaching-wise, from the college rank. So he'll be sought after, but he runs as close to a modern NBA system as you can find in college, and that's what's always drawn me to him, especially this year with how much shooting they have on that Villanova team. You would just watch, and you're like, they're basically running an NBA offense. This guy could come in right away and make it work.
Yeah, I totally think that Jay Wright could be the guy. It's almost like new Brad Stevens. I kind of thought that'd be Tony Bennett, but after the 16-1 thing happened, I don't know anymore. I'm kind of losing confidence on that. But I wanted to ask you about Tony Bennett as well, because he's a guy I really like. I feel like he could adapt to the next level, and even though his defense and offense are very slow-paced, I feel like he had to just adapt to his players at Virginia. So what's your thoughts on Tony Bennett? Because I know he might be a guy that might get an interview.
The thing that's always been so tough with me is, like, I mean, I think we've both been talking about it quite a bit, and anyone who imagines him coming to the NBA knows he's going to run a different system. That defense, at least in the form that he runs it in Virginia, the pace that the team plays, and the way that they even run their offense with no real dominant, like, go-to ball handler who creates everything. It's kind of an all-for-one type of thing offensively, and then, you know, the defense is so unique. He's going to run something different, but it's just a matter of what that would look like, and it's impossible to project, so that's what's tough for me is some of these college coaches are so – they're almost renowned for what they do, but at the same time, that makes it difficult to really want them to come coach your NBA team. Like, Shaka Smart hasn't gotten an NBA job. I think that's almost a similar situation where – What do you make of that at the NBA level? And I mean, you were bigger on Bennett than me, so, I mean, do you have any idea, like,
I just feel
how to translate that?
I mean, I think he ran a different system when he was at Washington State, because he made Klay Thompson a top 10 pick. He made Klay look really good his freshman year. I went back and watched some of that, and he ran super good screens for him. I feel like he really opened up a lot for Devin Booker if he was able to mentor Klay like that. But, I mean, from an outside point of view, I prefer Jay Wright right now over Tony Bennett. I think he's my number one guy, and then Kokoskov, to be honest, be number two. So did you see by chance the report from Real GM about the Milwaukee Bucks and their possible targets?
I did not. I mean, Stein talked about him in his newsletter too, but I didn't – if there's something newer, I didn't see it.
Yeah, I think it was a day or two ago. I saw some real retread hires might be in play there for Milwaukee, and that could help the Suns a lot, and that's Kevin McHale. He's one of the top candidates there. And that,
okay, yeah, that's what Stein had too. That jumped out to me too. It seemed like – of all the guys, I mean, he's really well respected, but you have to be a pretty unique mind to come up with a way to use Giannis the right way. And I would rather have like a more innovative coach than that.
I guess if they do go like that Kevin McHale route, like the older route as far as coaching goes, do you think that helps the Suns exponentially with their search? Because I feel like Milwaukee would have been number one job this summer if they go and get a guy like Kevin McHale, who I believe really isn't a good fit there at all.
I do, but I think at the same time, I mean, the one thing to consider there too is, like, the Bucks are—they're going to make the playoffs this year. They made the playoffs last year. You know, they're really looking to be a team that steps toward the the finals in the next during the lifespan of their next coach's contract. So it makes sense to me that they're targeting. I mean, and it's not just McHale. Like, they list Jeff Van Gundy, Monty Williams, and David Fizdale. Those are three guys who I think, if you're going to do you know, former NBA coach route, those are probably the top three in my mind. Mark Jackson may be on there as well. So, I mean, it's a little different situation there, but I still agree that they're probably the top option just because of Giannis.
Yeah, I guess from the Suns' point of view, though, I wanted to bounce it back over there, and we ran through the college route, we ran through the NBA assistant routes and former head coach routes, so I guess on the spot here, I have sort of a top four, top five, but what would be your hiring list as far as interviews go for the Phoenix Suns when McDonough puts those phone calls in?
Yeah, I like Wright a lot. I think you probably could tell based on my ranting about him. But yeah, I think Wright, and then I would actually prioritize the rest of these NBA guys before. I think Wright's the pretty far and away the college guy that's tops for me. I don't have another one. So yeah, Kokoskov makes a ton of sense. I think that would bring a much different culture in. And then as far as those NBA other guys go, kind of on the Bucks list, but filtering down, I'm sure those will be the names for every team. Fizdale's somebody who hasn't gone away in everybody's minds. And then, I mean, Jeff Van Gundy, it seems like, I mean, he coaches that FIBA team with a bunch of G League players, and they haven't lost. That's incredible. And he, you know, sounds eccentric when he goes on broadcast, but seems like one of the smartest basketball guys that there is. So I would not mind having somebody that smart come back in, and he's not going to allow these guys to make some of the mental lapses that we see so often here.
What do you think is the best overall fit for this roster? Because I feel like I'd mention it on this podcast, but with how young this roster is, do you feel like a guy like a Jay Wright, like a college coach who's developed 18 to 22-year-olds, might be the perfect fit here? Because I keep coming back to how young this core is. If Jackson's only 21, Booker's 21. If they still believe Dragan Bender's part of the core, he's only 20, and then their number one picks could be 19 or 20 years old. So it definitely seems like they'd go that college route if they wanted to go for their first option.
I do. I mean, and that's kind of the trend that we see so often. I think that's kind of what they were trying to do, not necessarily that Earl Watson had college coaching experience, but just that younger mindset with the former player kind of fresh out of the league. But, I mean, the thing that I respect so much about Villanova is they bring these talented guys in, and, I mean, they obviously have talent right when they come into the system, but Wright makes them learn how to play. He doesn't let them get minutes right away. He makes them kind of earn it, and, you know, now we're seeing Bridges and Brunson are a junior and a senior, and they're going to get drafted finally, probably, if Bridges leaves, and everybody thinks he will. But to me, that stands out because he's not one of these guys that's just putting together, and it works, but it's not him putting together a roster full of one-and-done freshmen and trying to make them fit together. He's building a system, building a program, and making these guys earn their playing time. And to me, that kind of stands out as what we haven't always been able to see from the coaches that have tried their hand with these young Suns the past 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Brennan. I think, just to recap real quick, I think my top two would be, like yours, it'd be Jay Wright, number one, and then I'd probably go Igor Kokoskov, to be honest, number two, because I like how he's really built that system alongside Quinn Snyder in Utah. But we probably shouldn't forget about Jay Tryon, this whole situation before we end today's podcast. We'll wrap it up with him. And I guess from his point of view, he wants the job next season. He said that before, and I guess from his point of view, if you wanted to build a case for him, it'd probably be, I was the one that got Josh Jackson to just finally get going.
For sure. And everybody has been, as far as players go, everybody, all the whole roster up and down has been more than happy with his work. I mean, everybody points to him. If you ask them about the developments that they've made, the comfort that they feel in the NBA is a big thing, I think, for young players. And every single player has expressed gratitude toward Triano for the job he's done. And I mean, that matters in a young team, kind of like we're talking about with, oh, well, you know, a college coach might be able to build that culture. I think Triano's on the right track there. It's almost like the curse of actually being around this team during this awful season has kind of put a sour taste in your mouth, because he happened to be the guy in charge during this season of 50 plus losses and probably the worst season of Suns basketball we've seen since before Nash was around. But that was going to happen either way, I think, is the thing to remember. So you have to look at it. And I mean, Bender's another guy who has taken bigger strides, I think, even than I expected, as somebody who was pretty big on him. So individuals have taken steps, and that's kind of all you can ask for. So you have to try to separate like 50 losses from those big steps. And obviously the team's going to get more talented during the next 3-4 years. So
I honestly feel like Triano will get an interview, but he won't be that much of a candidate. Do you feel like that's the same thought process for you, or do you think that Triano could actually be like a top two, top three candidate for them, that they could actually come around higher?
I think you're right. I mean, it would be horrible not to give him the interview, and they've already come out and said that they will. Obviously, McDonough has said that multiple times now, ever since that radio interview, or I think it was the Facebook Live one, actually, where he firmly said that, and then... But even Stein, in this piece outlining the guys, he says, the buzz is already building that Triano will be, at best, asked to stay on as an assistant. So it's like already we're not even, you know, we're 2 months away from probably when they're going to make this decision, and there's already kind of that lingering conversation that he won't really be a firm candidate, which is unfortunate, but I don't know. That's kind of been his career, and he's been really good at it. So at the same time, I think, you know, especially if he were to stay around, I'd be more than happy, although that might be a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, that honestly might be, because it'd be a whole new staff around him. But could you see Sarver or McDonough maybe paying a little bit more to keep Triano around as an assistant, just with how he's done so far this season as far as developing those guys and maybe just keeping a consistent voice in the locker room?
Well, if they pay as little for the coach as they'd like to, Sarver especially, I think they could probably afford to pay Triano a little more. But I think that's we'll see, I guess, is all I have there.
Yeah, for sure. And I appreciate you guys listening on today's podcast. We went a little bit longer than usual as far as the coaching search, and we did a little preview for you guys, or excuse me, a recap of the last game. But we came away today with both of us really much on the Jay Wright train of Villanova. We really hope that, honestly, he's the fit, and he's the first interview McDonough does. And it'll be hard to, honestly, get him away from Villanova. And before I end today's podcast, Brandon, what's the odds that you think Jay Wright even leaves Villanova?
I think if he's going to do it, it's going to be sometime soon. I mean, we'll see how these next 2 weekends of the tournament break down for him. But, you know, he's kind of on the brink to me as far as, like, you know, these guys leave right when they have the success, or they stick around forever and they just kind of stay at their program and turn it into one of these top schools. And I want it to go the other way, because I think he could do a lot in the NBA, but we'll see.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think he'd be definitely a culture changer that the Suns desperately need, and how it's been so far the last 7 to 8 years, and they're looking to make the playoffs for the first time in that amount of time. So I appreciate you guys listening, and we'll be back with you guys for another episode later on.